Okay, so get yourself comfortable in your meditation postures. You might want to take one or two, few deeper breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth. Even want to, if you feel like it, just you can make a noise, you know. Or whatever. So just take a couple of deeper breaths just to refresh the body a little bit before we start. And coming on to your breath as you breathe out, just have the thought of relaxing your legs. Right, just sort of letting go in the joints and the muscles and the hips right down to the feet, knees. Just see if you can give the weight of your legs fully up to gravity. So there's no need for there to be any holding in the legs when we meditate. But it's a place where we can nearly always let go a bit more. Because the fight, flight mechanism is evidently triggered in the muscles, the psoas muscles, the upper thigh, inner thigh there. Very often some kind of holding going on. And as you release the legs, you can just have a sense of a ground beneath you, both the whatever it is you're sitting on, but then under that, the actual the sense of it going down as it does thousands of miles below you, right down into the earth's molten core, and also spreading out into whatever neighborhood landscape you're sitting in. And if you feel there's too much kind of energy in the system, as it were, and imagine being able to discharge this kind of earthing the energy. You can discharge the energy into the earth. Alternatively, if there seems to be a deficit of energy, and imagine drawing it up maybe from the fiery center of the world. So we have both a sensational connection, a connection based in the physical sensations in the body, and also a playful, imaginative connection of the earth. And at the other end of things, just imagine the sky or maybe first the ceiling of wherever you're sitting if you're indoors. Imagine most of you are. You start with the distance between the crown of the head and the ceiling of the room. Just sort of gently trying to release the crown up towards the ceiling and then by extension up towards the sky above the building. Just be aware of any sensations in the scalp. All of this we're doing as we breathe in and out. So we're always involved in the breath as a way of encouraging an embodied rather than a purely mental experience. Maybe you can have a sense of the shape of your skull, the bone of the skull. Imagine softening the scalp. Bodhidharma talks a little bit about being a masseur. Morning, and one of the things you find out if you do massages, actually people hold quite a lot of tension in the scalp quite often. Have a sense of the shape of the skull. Your skull as you breathe in and out and bring a bit more awareness into the scalp, covering the dome of your skull. And just noticing the feeling of the air on your face. Just noticing the incredible sensitivity of the face, packed as it is with nerve endings. Extremely complicated, intricate muscles. It's just becoming more aware of your face as you breathe in and out. I like to imagine sort of breathing a whole of the face as you breathe in and out. If you can let go of any unnecessary holding at the top of the jaw, hinge of the jaw. Particularly on the in-breath, just release. Imagine releasing the jaw very lightly on the in-breath. you might find that that feels like there's a very light kind of movement in the jaw as you breathe in and out, as it naturally kind of releases slightly on the in-breath and closes again. This is a very delicate movement I'm talking about, more of a feeling than a physical movement. It's that hinge at the top is sort of very slightly opening and closing as you breathe in and out. Might be facilitated by having the tongue just sort of flattened gently against the roof of the mouth. Well, it's making a seal in the tongue in the upper palate. A lot of energetic traditions, this is quite an important connection, sometimes known as the magpie bridge. Also stimulates the production of saliva, which contains quite a lot of Taoist meditation emphasize. Let the lips be nice and soft. Just enjoying the sensitivity of your face, maybe having the thought, may my face soften, finding your own words to reassure your face that it can relax. Have to have a persona, as it were. Just let your face relax, soften. Might even want to go inside the mouth and imagine softening the inside of the cheek. I find that paying a little bit of attention to the interior of the mouth is quite useful. It gives you a bit of a sense of the interiority of your body, perhaps. Of course, the mouth is in itself a significant in our relationship with the world. In the first way in which we really get to know the world is through the mouth when we're babies. Of course, all through our lives, the mouth remains a central way of interact with the world. Just feeling into what it feels like to really let the face soften. You're not holding it against the world or trying to project a particular image out into the world. as you breathe in and as you breathe out. Going to the sides of the head and the ears. Maybe just round the back of the skull there, back of the head. Just very, again, very delicate little movement. Just see if you can just peel the base of the skull away from the spine a little bit. Imagine just opening up the base of the skull a little bit. Sometimes known as the ancestral gate. And we imagine a breath kind of coming up inside the skull, up in the base. Between the inside of the skull and the brain. So breathing in, breathing out, being aware of the whole of your head. Energetically, sensationally, with an orb of energy, the brain soften a little. Maybe not a good description. Under the chin. Coming down into the throat. Just gently exploring any sensations in the throat, front, and the neck at the back. And when you're ready, moving down from the throat. Top of the torso and towards the heart area. Placing in the front and the back of the body as you do so. Inside any internal feelings. When we are exploring the body in this way, we're interested in sensation, but also emotion. What's the sort of feeling or mood of the throat, the feeling or mood, the upper chest, you know. Any images that might be suggested by that part of our body. Let all this arise and notice it, but don't start manipulating it, just let it come and go. Going to the heart and the lungs, the center of the chest, and the back. So we're just making this connection between the head and the heart. Through the throat. Still allowing the face to soften, throat to open if we can. Back of the body there to relax a little, broaden a little. Feel into what is suggested by the breath, by the in-breath and the out-breath. Don't worry if it's actually happening or not. Just let the self feel into any energetic kind of movement that the breath suggests. In the heart and the head, as you breathe in and out. Symbolically trying to encourage the heart to become more conscious, if you like. Our face is such a superb and sensitive part of the body when it comes to our experiencing of emotion. Very obvious example of also is displayed in the face. Anger is displayed through the face. The face is a natural place to become more sensitive to our emotions. Because we encourage a connection between the face, the heart, try and relax the throat so we're not swallowing our emotions, as it were, swallowing our feelings, allowing them to flow freely between heart and face. Find your face growing a little bit warm.
Thank you, Paramananda. not feeling very verbal or articulate after that meditation, but there is a space if people want to share and explore meditation or what's going on in the retreat.
My feet, did you say?
What's going on with their feet? Yes. No, I meant on the retreat. But it could be stuff going on with the feet.
Could very well. Feet are interesting. Maybe to the point of view.
Yes.
I have a question. It's Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
I have a question about... I often feel that I have tension in my teeth. And I don't understand why I should feel tension in my teeth. But it really is quite clear that that I have this tension there. And wondering if there's any... you have any ideas or any thoughts about that?
Well, not really. I mean, you could ask a dentist, I suppose. But I mean, from a meditative point of view, I suppose I don't. You could sort of try and open up to what associations it brings up for you, you know. I mean, I don't know any physiological reason why you should feel that, but you could, you know, explore it a little bit imaginatively. There's probably some, you know, if you sort of sit with it, it's probably going to give rise to some kind of imaginings, if you like, you know.
Yeah,
so I mean, other than that, I don't really know what to say. I don't know if it's a leader. But yeah, I mean, you know, you could sort of allow yourself to imagine around the teeth, you know, what does that?
I might be able to say something. So I went through a phase of working with like a lot of trauma and a lot of stress and everything, and it was affecting my sleep. But like Paramananda said, I went to a dentist. And he said, "You are grinding your teeth." Wow, so yeah. It was all this stress and this tension, you know, and I'm constantly like this, you know, and he said, "You do it," you know. So I've actually had just like a little shield that I put over my my teeth. And I can actually see after a couple of months how I've worn it away. So it might be worth checking that out. That's all I can say from my experience. But it was a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean... yeah, thank you for that. I mean, it's quite common, isn't it, to be grinding our teeth? I think it's the jaw, isn't it? You know, why a cramp in the jaw, you know, and moving. And sort of worry, it is an anxiety thing, isn't it? It's quite common, and I've known quite a few people that grind their teeth at night, common or not. But you probably know if you did that regularly, I would imagine.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I mean, I suppose I would just say we all carry our tensions, draw our attention in different places, different ways, and the body does speak in metaphors quite often. You know, like tension, you know, we're carrying the weight of the world in our shoulders, we've got tension here or there. You know, there's lots of phrases we use about body and things that have got a kind of wisdom to them.
Only about the teeth. Probably. You want to get your teeth stuck into something, don't you? I'd like to get my teeth stuck into that. No, you don't hear that very much these days. Really. It's a common expression.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting, isn't it? I'd be just like interested in what's going on and see if anything.
Yeah.
I'll play with it. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Bailey is right. I mean, particularly space, I would imagine nearly everybody's got some kind of holding in the space. You know, it's such a, you know, it's got such a sort of, so many muscles in it, hasn't it, the space? And we learn, we learn to control the space. You know, socially, we really learn control the space, you know. And it's not, the way we hold our faces isn't particularly natural. It's quite interesting if you get they have to teach blind people how to, you know, use their face in a socially accepted way because they don't get that reflection. So, you know, they pull all these really well for sighted people in that weird and wonderful expression. So we've learned to control our face, you know, socially put on a face. And that's why I do think in meditation it's really quite important to learn to fully relax.
I think I'm going to blow more raspberries.
Well, that's a possible possibility. Maybe mute yourself.
Thank you.
This is Suze here. I'd like to say something that I found happened to me this morning. I've been really enjoying the retreat and going quite deep in meditation and been quite emotional, very drained and tired. But like I said, I've been really enjoying it. And yet this morning I woke up and I felt like I didn't want to join in. I didn't want to turn up. It was like some resistance. And obviously I did turn up and I really enjoyed it. I just wondered, any thoughts about, you know, why I was feeling this sudden resistance of not wanting to turn up for some reason. Any thoughts on it?
Well, I suppose my thoughts are we're very complicated and we don't just think one thing or want one thing. We've got a whole hand. And even if we enjoy something, part of us maybe think we shouldn't be enjoying it, or part of us might not want to do it, you know, or we don't deserve it and we can resist it. You know, it's quite interesting that sometimes we're more comfortable with discomfort or pain or suffering than we are with happiness and joy or being creative or connected. You know, if that's what we've been used to, we can get into habits or expectations and it can be challenging. Can be challenged to the ego and our view of ourselves and of life when we're experiencing something different. And I'm not saying that's what's going on for you, but I'm just thinking about my own experience, that actually it's been more of a challenge opening to joy than it has been being down there, you know, in the depths with all the trauma and all that kind of stuff. I mean, in some ways, you know, I'm being a bit flippant here, but you know, it was tough and I needed to work with a lot of difficult things. But almost it became part of my identity and I was more comfortable with that. And then allowing myself to sort of maybe let go of some of that attachment and that way of being and that identification and let myself experience the other things. But I also think we do resist things, you know. We're not integrated and so there's, well, for every part of us, it's where there's a push-pull going on, you know. And especially if we're making any progress, there's a whole part of us that's digging our heels in, you know, and we don't want to change. The ego doesn't like us to change, as Paramahansa was saying the other day. So it could be anything, really. What do you think was going on?
Well, I don't usually on a day-to-day basis have many deep meditations, and I found that they were going really quite deep, and I wondered whether that might have been something to do with it, that I was kind of sort of touching something inside me that it was making it making a bit of resistance, because I had felt quite emotional and drained and so forth. So I wondered whether it was something saying stop, can't take any more, or just a bit scared of it or something. Yeah, that's uncertain, but yeah, it's interesting.
It could have been either, or it could have been both. And I do think we do need to listen sometimes and not push in and force ourselves beyond where we're, you know, we have the capacity or the resilience to hold whatever's coming up, you know. And there's a part of us that might, you know, just not want the change and not want to go for that. But I think, you know, if you've had a lot of deep experiences also, it takes a while to absorb and process them as well, and there may be part of you that's thinking, oh well, okay, I need to put the brakes on a little bit. But anyway,
thank you.
The only way to know is to see what happens.
Okay, thanks very much.
We've got a related question here. So it's how do we get a balance between, how do we get the balance between preventing our energy becoming turgid and giving too much so that we are drained? And also, how do we get that balance between opening our heart and not opening ourselves up to pain?
Well, I don't think you can open a heart and not open yourself up to pain. I think, you know, I mean, the first noble truth is the truth of suffering, isn't it? So, you know, we start in, you know, I don't think that's possible, really. I mean, what we can do is build up resilience, you know. We do that by making sure we're connected in a way that we're not just the heart, but it's also the guts and the roots, and you know, the heart probably connected with the rest of us, you know. But I don't think we can just open ourselves up to the sunny side of life, you know. We have to, you know, you either open or you don't.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think as Bodhi Leader was saying, you know, therefore you need to be, you know, careful in a way. But actually I think if energetically you're connected, it's not, you know.
I mean, I guess that's why there's a lot of emphasis on shamatha practice and, you know, establishing yourself in sort of more calm and stability and, you know, I suppose more integration, all those sorts of, you know, positivity that can hold that. And I think all the practices we do actually are building towards that. So some may specifically look like they're about developing concentration or developing insight, but I think on the whole all of them are about, you know, developing that capacity to be aware and to be open and to, you know, love and be compassionate. And particularly I would say the set of Brahma Viharas practices, but not just practices, because they are qualities and ways of being. In a way, that's the territory of those. You know, we start off with metta and cultivating kindness, and then kindness meets suffering, kindness meets pain, our own and others and in the world. And that's where the compassion arises. And then, but that's not all there is, you know, so there are positive qualities, there are positive things happening in people's lives, and So gladness can arise, you know, joy can arise. And if you focus on one or the other to the exclusion, then you get a very, well, it's not reality and it's very unbalanced. So I think we develop the capacity to sit with the suffering, we open to the gladness and the joy, and to be able to experience both, and sometimes both simultaneously. And then with that, we develop the upekkha, the equanimity. And that's not a sort of like cold equanimity. It's coming very much from a very engaged place, in a place of love and metta, which can include the suffering, can include the joy. And we drop in that dharmic perspective, particularly of conditionality, you know, seeing the conditions that lead to those states and sometimes how we and others contribute to that by our actions. And also, more specifically, those reflections on the three lakshanas, so being aware of impermanence, being aware of dukkha, and being aware of insubstantiality and not the fixed self, and nothing having fixed self, and everything being fluid and empty and all that. So if we do actually take those on board, I think that does actually help us to be able to be there with that. But as Paramahansa says, you know, there is dukkha. That is part of reality. We're not going to be able to open our hearts and not experience that. But yes, sometimes that can also be transformative. I'm thinking of some of the conversation we were having in our group, which reminded me that some of the times that I've experienced the most pain have also sometimes been quite profound and quite joyful. I'm thinking like of being around my mother at the time of her death and when she actually died. But the level of depth of communication and connection that we had in the months before she died, and also what it was like actually being with her in the room, even when she was in a coma or something. And actually there's a very peaceful energy before she died. And it was the most devastating experience in my life, the loss of my mother. But I would not have wanted to have closed my heart and not experienced that pain, you know. And it is a paradox that I think if we close our heart, if we block emotions and things like that, we block everything. It's like if you go on beta blockers or if you're on antidepressants. Yes, it might help you get through day-to-day life and not be stressed or anxious, but it closes down a whole range of emotions, and that includes the more joyful. So in a way, if we want to be able to experience the whole range, then we have to just open our heart, and that means turning towards things that are difficult and challenging and painful, and being able to sit with those and hold those. And from that, there can be this opening out into all kinds of other stuff as well. Anyway, that's just my thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is, you know, maybe an argument to be made that the heart has to break, really. You know, when we talk about having a broken heart, in a way, I mean, that might be a case to be made that actually that's where it's like all muscle, it's a muscle, isn't it? I mean, I know this is taken a bit literally, but if you want, you know, for muscles, they have to sort of out a bit, you know, for them to grow, don't they? They have to split. But I'm not saying, you know, I'm making a metaphor out of it, you know. It's dukkha that changes us, really, you know. But the other thing I wanted to say, actually, on a sort of practical level, I think one of the reasons why a lot of people find this so difficult is that we've moved our basic understanding of things from a circular to a linear. We tend to think of our life as linear now rather than circular, and it's partly the basic disconnection to earth, you know, nature, which, you know, when we were more, we're increasingly separated from the natural cycles of things. So I'm increasingly sheltered from death and things. I live, you know, as a natural part of life. You know? So, you know, we don't have that perspective anymore. We don't embrace death in the way as a natural, but even welcome part of life, you know. Because we're so cut off from the natural world, you know, and we're sentimental about everything. There's a kind of terrible sentimentality in consumeristic society, I think. You know, we're cut off from that side, you know, nature, of course, life and death, you know, how it works. That's how things work, and we're no exception. Which of course is just, I suppose I'm just advocating a more visceral understanding of impermanence rather than a conceptual understanding of it. You know, we need to really appreciate what that is, life, you know. Life is death, you know. So it works. You know. There's no life without death, as it were. We don't have culturally, we don't hold that anymore in any experiential way.
Okay, so I'm just looking at the time and it is.
Okay. We'll go around though, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
We don't have to be linear. We just go around again.
We could, and actually we could. Time isn't linear, it's all happening at the same time.
That's Doctor Who, mate. I can't believe everything.
Not just Doctor Who.
No, Star Trek. No, I know. Okay, yeah.
All right, so I'm going to leave us with a poem then.
Oh, okay.
This is by Michael Learning. When the heart is cut or cracked or broken, do not clutch it. Let the wound lie open. Let the wind from the good old sea blow in to bathe the wound with salt, and let it sting. Let a stray dog lick it. Let a bird lean in the hole and sing a simple song like a tiny bell, and let it ring. Okay, so that brings today to an end, and tomorrow, 8 o'clock meditation, Paramahansa will be leading the 10:30 session, and then we'll again have whatever's going to happen tomorrow at 4 or 4:35.